This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
3-2. McMunn and Yates make it better. 5-11. The time of the goal. Down in front of it. Score! Jacob Trouba, all the way down at the side of the net, buries it. And the Winnipeg Jets have tied the game up 3-3. Wheeler down for Trouba. In tight. Finds the back of the net. And this game is all even.
From game three of the second round playoff series against the Nashville Predators, Jacob Trouba lighting up the scoreboard for the Winnipeg Jets. I think it's safe to say it was a better time in the relationship between the Winnipeg Jets and Jacob Trouba as both sides went to arbitration. They held an arbitration hearing yesterday, and we now wait either for a contract agreement or an arbitrator's ruling sometime in the next 24 to 36 hours or so, we expect. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live on TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. Send your texts to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com. I say,
how is everyone's anxiety right now?
I don't have any anxiety.
I've got none.
How's Trouba anxiety?
Oh, I still don't have any anxiety. I don't get, you know, people are worked up. People are a little bit, they want a resolution. But if you're, you know, if it's bordering on anxiety at this point in time, well, it's July 21st, folks.
And I don't know. There's a lot of Jets fans out there with some anxiety right now regarding this situation.
It's time to reevaluate your priorities at that point in time.
Obviously not. There's a lot of angst and people are excited. And there's a lot of focus on what is going to happen with Jacob Trouba. But something is going to get done.
Oh, no, I don't have any anxiety. I was just asking the audience how their anxiety was.
Well,
I'm good.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're good. So I'll put it out on Twitter or on text message. If you are anxious about the Jacob Trouba situation, let us know. You know, you can give us a comment. You know, how are you dealing with your anxiety? Maybe you're going on long walks on the beach at a nice sunset. Maybe, you know, you're turning to the bottle. Maybe that's an option that you're choosing to go with. Whatever it might be. If you're anxious about Jacob Trouba, let us know how you're dealing with it.
Drew, the only bottle that I'm turning to is the baby bottle.
That's true. That's for you, though. I mean, the kid is, you know, is fine on its own, but you're just sucking down milk out of the baby bottle.
It's amazing how much Ariella was feeding yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, she's 8 weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
She's officially 8 weeks, so happy 8 weeks, Ariella. But she feeds so much more than she did just like 3 or 4 weeks ago, but she's the best, so.
I Dave, I'm looking at you, and we both have a look on our face like, if we carry on down this line, we're definitely going to get into trouble.
I'm like, is this a hockey show? I don't understand.
Yeah, it is a hockey show. So let's get started talking about Jacob Trouba.
And I know you have a bit of anxiety.
I have no anxiety whatsoever about Jacob Trouba. I have absolutely no anxiety because I know that next year, Jacob Trouba is either going to be a member of the Winnipeg Jets, or if the team chooses to do so, they will trade him to another team, and the Jets will get a return for Jacob Trouba. So it's not like there's a possibility here of a contract dispute or a contract holdout, because he's going to get, at the very least, an arbitrator's ruling, and the team will move along, and or the team will decide to go a different direction with him. But one way or another, Jacob Trouba is going to be a member of a Winnipeg Jets, or he's going to acquire assets for the Winnipeg Jets.
Right, and we don't know if it's going to be a one-year deal. Right now, you know, all signs indicate that it's going to be a one-year deal, because the Jets would never want a two-year deal, because as you just mentioned, if it was a two-year deal, and the team has that option, we should mention that, whether it's going to be a one- or two-year deal, they would obviously, and Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun mentioned this earlier this week, there's no reason why they would pick 2 years, because then they would lose him for nothing in 2 years. So it's either going to be a 5- or 6-year deal or a 1-year deal.
That's generally what most people expect. I'm not sure I understand the logic of why it can't be a 2-year deal. So even if it's a 2-year deal and you look, I mean, let's
because he becomes a UFA after that second year.
I get that, but if he gets a one-year deal and then he gets another one-year deal, he's still going to become a UFA after that second one-year deal. So I don't see it being...
Well, I think the likelihood, though, of two consecutive one-year deals is basically...
is higher than, well, I mean, then they'll... I mean, but then
that's not going to happen.
Well, then he becomes trade bait, I mean, which is what happens if it looks like he's imminently about to hit unrestricted free agency. But that's the situation where we stand today. You know, for the most part, if there's not a long-term deal on the table...
And I wouldn't rule that out.
A trade.
No, I wouldn't rule out a multi-year contract here.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point. They can be doing that right now as we speak. They have the 48 hours before the arbitrator makes his ruling.
Yeah.
And so from that point, the teams can and the player's agent can continue to negotiate, which is obviously what they're probably likely doing. And what we see in a lot of these arbitration cases is that they'll continue the negotiation throughout. And as long as you get it done before the arbitrator makes his ruling,
right,
then you can, in theory, sign up.
Happened with P.K. Subban. If you remember back with P.K. Subban, when he was a member of the Montreal Canadiens,
yep,
they finished their arbitration hearing, and almost, you know, an hour or 2 hours after the arbitration hearing ended, both sides agreed on that massive 8-year, I think, what was it, $9 million average annual value contract. You know, so that's, you know, there, it certainly still is a possibility. Are you surprised? This is the first time in Winnipeg Jets 2.0 that a player has actually gone to the arbitration hearing. Lots of players have filed for arbitration, but it's never come to both sides, you know, on opposite sides of the table with an arbitrator in the middle. Are you surprised it's gone this far?
I'm not that surprised, Drew, in the sense that there is the history from 2 years ago. I mean, Jacob Trouba and his agent, Kurt Overhart, they were on the record. They requested a trade. That's a fact. And Jacob Trouba didn't play the first 15 games of the season, and he ended up signing that 2-year, $6 million contract. So there is the history there. So I'm not surprised because of the fact that Jacob Trouba missed 27 games last year. And I think there is a big spread between what the Jets are offering and what Jacob Trouba and Kurt Overhart are asking for, right? Well, we talked about it last week. I mean, I think we all agree that it makes sense for Jacob Trouba to be somewhere around $6 million to $6.5 million a year. It's possible that's the most he's going to get. And when you look at the arbitration and, you know, what happened yesterday, obviously we're not privy to that hearing, but if you look at what the Jets were offering and what Jacob Trouba was offering, obviously Jacob Trouba is not a $4 million a year defenseman.
Nor is he a $7
million
a year.
Right, so he's going to be somewhere around $6 to $6.5 million. Matt Dumba signed earlier today for $6 million a year. Mm-hmm. I think Jacob Trouba is a better defenseman than Matt Dumba.
But
Dumba's better offensively.
Dumba's got the offensive numbers.
But Trouba's a better all-around defenseman. So based on that, I mean, yeah, sure, Trouba should get $6.5 million a year, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets are offering that right now on a long-term contract.
Well, I mean, then if the Jets are offering six and a half, numbers that I think most all of us in this room would agree are fair, and the you know, what is it that Trouba wants in exchange? I mean, he can't... It's not negotiating in good faith to really go to the table and demand $7 million a year or $7 million plus.
No, but that's just a starting point in the negotiation.
Well, that's the starting point in the arbitration.
I mean, whole idea is that the Jets, I mean, just Drew, you said 30 seconds ago, the fact is that Trouba's not worth $4 million, nor is he worth seven.
Right.
So the fact that the team knew going in, so I mean, both parties have to be acting in good faith. You can't just say, well, Trouba has an expectation of being, you know, of understanding he's not a seven. Well, the team similarly doesn't, but neither team is going to say, well, let's start at five, and then I'm going to start at six, and maybe we'll meet at 5.5. I mean, it's just the way negotiations go. So I'm not terribly shocked at the way it's going, and I just think that it's a part of the process.
Yeah, and I understand why, guys, there are a lot of Jets fans that are frustrated because they say, well, you know, it's $500,000. I mean, if you have to pay Trouba $7 million instead of $6.5 million, well, when you're running a hockey team and there's a salary cap of $80 million and you're going to have to pay Patrick Laine in the neighborhood of $9 to $10 million a year on his next contract, you're going to have to pay Blake Wheeler
probably around
$9 million a year. I mean, that $500,000 is a big deal.
Absolutely, and I'm not saying that the Jets should you know, go, you know, beyond what they're comfortable with. I mean, nor should Trouba accept less than he's comfortable accepting. It just seems with all the comparables that are out there, you know, the Jets can come to the table with their guys, Trouba can come to the table with their guys, and it seems like there should be a deal to be made, unless the caveat to that being, unless he does not want to be here on a long-term basis.
But the only thing I would counter that with, and again, as Ez said, we're not privy to the negotiations, so we don't know what happened on the inside. But the fact is, we can't make an assumption similar to, you know, because we don't know these things, we don't know what the Jets have come up to. So maybe the Jets haven't hit that number. Maybe the Jets are stuck at $5 to $5.5 million, and Trouba's like, no, you know what, I want minimum, you know, 5.75 to 6. I'm just saying the whole point is that we're presupposing a lot of things, and to me, it's dangerous simply because there's a lot of unknowns, and until we get a little more insight, then it's really hard because it's just conjecture at that point. So to my way of thinking, if you look at it, you'd see Trouba, and again, like I said, we can't make an assumption that Jets are just saying, okay, we've got $6 million, 6 years on the table, it's a $36 million deal. Because I would suspect that Trouba could take that, and similar to like an Evander Kane situation, you know, if he really wanted out, he could get traded during the, you don't have to play here in Winnipeg for 6 years.
Right.
So you know, to your point, Drew, about good faith, I don't think it's, if he was offered 6 times 6, I think he's taking that. I just know that the Jets are there yet. But again, that's because it's all speculation at this point.
And the Winnipeg Jets obviously want the multi-year contract. But make no mistake, a one-year contract is great for Jacob Trouba because he's coming off of a season in which he missed almost 30 games. Mm-hmm. His offensive numbers were lower than they were a couple of years ago when he was in the first year of that two-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, I mean, it's a great kind of prove-it situation where, you know, if he plays close to a full season and he puts up, you know, 40 to 45 points, which he's definitely capable of putting up those type of numbers,
sure.
I mean, then he's going to get his $7 to $8 million on his next contract.
You're probably right. Let me ask you guys this question. I mean, as we sit here today with the expectation or the great possibility that it is only a one-year contract, if it's only a one-year contract, do you think that spells the end or that that's the beginning of the end of Jacob Trouba as a member of the Winnipeg Jets on a long-term basis?
Not necessarily, Drew, because you look at Connor Hellebuck, and he signed a one-year contract last year.
Right, but Hellebuck was so many years away from UFA, whereas Trouba will only be 1 year away from UFA.
Well, you're talking about a difference of a year in age?
Well,
Hellebuck was 2013 draft and Trouba was 2012.
Right.
So just the point is, look at how well Hellebuck played. He was a Vezina Trophy finalist. I don't think it necessary. Obviously, we're talking about apples and oranges here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Trouba and Hellebuck are very different because Trouba has the history with the Jets that Hellebuck doesn't have as far as having contentious negotiations.
Well, that's my point. So given everything that's happened in past, given the contract dispute and the trade request from a couple of years ago, given, you know, everything you know about Trouba's agent, Kurt Overhart, and the history that Overhart has with clients that have been, for lack of a better word, disgruntled in other cities. Guys like Ryan Johansson is, the name that comes to the mind.
Yeah, Kyle Turris.
Kyle Turris, yeah. Of course, is another name that comes to mind. So given that history, given the players involved, given the history that exists, if this is a one-year contract for Jacob Trouba, do you think that it's the beginning of the end of Jacob Trouba as a member of the Winnipeg Jets?
I don't think so. I mean, there's always the possibility that the Jets trade Jacob Trouba, but right now there's no indication that the Jets are going to trade him or Trouba doesn't want to be here. And, you know, there have been reports that, you know, Trouba doesn't want to be in Winnipeg, but that's just based on speculation. That's not based on anything factual.
Comments from Trouba himself.
Right, Jacob Trouba and Kurt Overhart over the last couple of years, this includes after the season, have said that Trouba wants to be in Winnipeg. So I think if Trouba signs a one-year contract, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not going to stay with the Jets and sign another long-term contract. But there always exists the possibility that Trouba will be traded. But right now, I mean, if you're going to say that the Jets are going to trade Trouba, that's just not based on anything factual.
Dave, same question.
Well, I mean, no, I don't think it is. I think the only way the Jets trade Trouba is if they're going to lose him for nothing. You know, when he's, you know, I mean, if he was going to be a UFA at the end of the season, which obviously he's not going to be. So to me, like, I just think, like, if you're, remember, what is Jacob Trouba going to be for the Jets for the next 6 years if they sign him to a deal?
Shut down defenseman.
With Josh Morrissey. I mean, they'll be one of the top pairing defensive duos in the NHL. Where are you going to replace him? How are you going to replace him? I mean, we all know the players in the system. There's no replacement for Jacob Trouba right now in the Jets system. Can you go out and trade him? Sure, but why would a team that's trading for Jacob Trouba, unless you're, you know, switching sides, you know, you're going left side, right side. But I'm just saying that it's an asset that you just don't give up easily. And so to me, if you're the Jets, you're wanting to retain him as
the
as
Jets
best
do not want to trade Trouba. I mean, there's absolutely no reason why they would want to, unless, as Dave said, they're forced to, really. if he's going to become a UFA. But making those types of trades, the one-for-one trades or two-for-two trades, I mean, we saw that with Calgary and Carolina, right? Mm-hmm. Noah Hanifin went to Calgary. Dougie Hamilton went to Carolina. Obviously, Michael Ferland and Elias Lindholm were the other two players. But, I mean, it's very tough to make a one-for-one trade where you get a defenseman back that is equal to the defenseman you're trading, right?
Exactly.
Very difficult. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Like I said, you know, next 24, 36, maybe 48 hours until we find out if Jacob Trouba and the Jets come to an agreement on a long-term deal or if it's the arbitrator's ruling that Trouba's going to play under for the next season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for everyone on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.
I like it. I think he's a very good player. I think $3 million is probably somewhere around what he deserves to make because, yeah, the points are probably not that high, but he has a lot of other good things. You know, Paul Maurice loves him. Face-offs, penalty-killing, physical, playoff participant, shutdown center kind of guy. A lot of things to like about Adam Lowry's game beyond just the goals and assists.
Via the NHL Network, that was TSN's Mike Johnson talking about the contract handed out to Jets center Adam Lowry. Voids arbitration, gets a 3-year contract with the Jets. It's an $8.75 million contract, an average annual value, a salary cap hit of $2.916 million. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Shout out to my dad. He just texted me. He's listening today.
That's nice. That's good. Solid performance there by your dad.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about Adam Lowry's contract extension. As I mentioned, it's a 3-year deal. Avoids arbitration with the Jets.
Like this contract a lot.
You like this contract. Yep. Please expand on that point there, Mr. Ginsburg.
Well, Lowry's been such a dependable player for the Jets, and you can just pencil Lowry in as your fourth-line center for the next 3 years because that's where he's going to be. And, you know, Adam Lowry was a little bit of a later pick, Dave, back in 2011 in St. Paul. He was a third-round pick, and you know, he started off his career, if you remember, with the Ice Caps, and it's hard to believe, but this is going to be his fifth year with the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, last year obviously didn't go the way he wanted, right? He missed almost half of the season with injuries, and, you know, I think Lowry would tell you that in the playoffs, you know, he was probably dealing with a few injuries, and, you know, he didn't get the production that he wanted, but he's been such a reliable player for Paul Maurice, and, you know, when you look at Lowry, I actually thought he was going to probably sign for 4 or 5 years. I thought he was going to sign for more. And, you know, Lowry and his agent have their reasons for signing, you know, for 3 years. But I wouldn't be surprised if Chevy was prepared to offer him a longer contract, 4 or 5 years. But if you're Lowry, then you have to factor in that he's a UFA then, right?
Well, he's a UFA after this contract comes up as well.
Right. So maybe that's one of the reasons why he didn't sign the 4 or 5 year deal, because he just wants to leave his options open.
Huh.
But I mean, $2.9 million a year, I have no problem with that. It's probably a little bit more than I thought he was going to sign for. I thought he was probably going to be closer to, you know, 2.2 or 2.5, but I have absolutely no problem giving him that amount of money because he's so reliable. And, you know, you can put him out there on the penalty kill. He's got that physical aspect to his game. And he's been a very productive player. You forget, Drew, 2 years ago, he scored 15 goals. So everybody says, you know, Lowry doesn't have the scoring touch or he doesn't have the hands. No. I would tend to disagree with that.
Oh, had he played a full season this year, his numbers would have been, he would have been closer to, you know, probably 35, maybe even 40 points. 40 points would probably be a little bit on the high end because 21 points in 45 games puts him on pace for it to have a career year.
Yep.
Career high is 29 points. That happened 2 years ago when he played all 82 games and you potted those 15 goals, as you mentioned. You know, Dave, what's your, you know, how do you see Adam Lowry over the next 3 years with Winnipeg Jets? As he mentioned, you can put him in as your fourth line center. Given the way the Jets lineup is right now, is he your fourth line center? Is he your third line center? Maybe playing with Perreault and Roslovic on the wings and Kopp slides in to the fourth line center role. How do you see Paul Maurice deploying Adam Lowry over the next, I guess, you know, 12, 18 months, whatever?
Well, as I said, he's definitely a favorite of Paul Maurice. So he likes him in a lot of situations, and he finds him, he's reliable in those circumstances. So he could very easily slot into that third center. I mean, ideally on the Jets, he'd be a 4C. I mean, he really would be an excellent 4C. I mean, he can play in that 3C, depending on how they configure the lines, Drew. So, you know, it's definitely possible for Adam Lowry and gives him more opportunities to score, of course. But, no, I mean, I like the contract. I'm with Ez. I thought it was a little bit on the high side in terms of the actual money. That was, I thought it was probably, I thought he'd max out around 2.5. So, but you know, and it's interesting, like his comments to the Sun, I know the contracts we have coming up. I know who needs to be signed. So it's kind of a balancing act. The length and value of this contract isn't going to negatively impact the salary cap situation, Lowry said. So it's interesting that he is an insightful player. You know, he's a guy who's looking at the totality of the team. So I'm not terribly surprised by that.
Yeah, Adam Lowry, of course, signing that 3-year contract. He was on with Rick on the afternoon ride. I believe that was a couple days ago. Had a sort of an interesting back and forth with Mr. Ralph. Here's what they had to say.
I'll probably spend some money on Fortnite, to be honest.
Fortnite? You're playing that, are you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, big into that. But, no, you know what? I bought myself a KitchenAid mixer the other day. I knew the contract was coming and we were getting close and it was Amazon Prime Day. So I treated myself to a mixer.
So you got through on it. I don't know. It's not many guys got through. I don't think some people had some problems with that. What's going on with the mixers? Are we having pina coladas or you're probably making healthy drinks?
Oh, no. I'm talking like, you know, like making pizza dough and like baking cookies, like that kind of mixer. So people have been giving me a hard time the last few days because I've been pretty pumped about it. But no, I'm not really a big spender. I don't know. I'll take my family out for dinner probably this weekend. But, you know, I just kind of enjoy it. You work so hard and to be able to stay in Winnipeg for the next 3 years and kind of continue building on what we've kind of started and continue my career there. I'll just try and enjoy it for the next few days.
And that's Adam Lowry from earlier this week on with Rick Ralph on the afternoon ride. He's very down to earth, you know, Adam Lowry, as you heard in those comments where, you know, his big splurge was on a KitchenAid mixer, which I believe can run upwards of $500. So hopefully he was able to scrape it together with his new $8.75 million contract.
That was a terrific interview on Thursday with Rick. And Rick, you know, if you listen to the interview, he asked Adam, now that you've signed this contract, you know, are you going to make a big purchase? And you know,
KitchenAid mixer, $500.
Exactly. And as Dave knows, I mean, Lowry has always been fantastic with the media. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that his dad was a former NHLer and is now an assistant coach in the NHL. And, you know, really funny that, you know, he just signs this big 3-year contract, $8.75 million, and he's joking about buying a mixer. I think he could afford a little bit more than that now. But
well, if he had signed a longer contract, maybe he could afford a Vitamix or something. Those are really expensive. You know, a KitchenAid mixer is only on a 3-year, you know, $8.75 million deal. I've heard of Fortnite. I don't know what it is.
You actually don't know what it is?
I honestly know it's a game of sorts.
So, like, it's a first-person shooter.
Oh, okay.
Like, basically, it's a shooting game.
It's a shooting game?
Yeah.
Is it, like, for Xbox or... I don't know. I don't play video games.
We're going to have to get Remus and us into this, so...
Okay, you know, I mean, I'm not a video game guy, so...
You know what Fortnite means, right?
Like, 2 weeks from now.
A period of 2 weeks.
Yeah. That has nothing to do with the game, I imagine. Anything else there, Shakespeare?
Yeah, like, do you want to continue to read the dictionary? I don't understand.
Anyways, that's Adam Lowry talking about his new contract. So you guys, you know, you're probably right. I mean, what's his ceiling, though? You know, if this is a guy who plays 80 games and he's going to get more and more ice time, oftentimes he's going to take the draw in his own zone. He's going to be in defensive situations more than offensive situations.
Well, you just nailed it. I mean, Adam Lowry is a check-in line center.
Right.
I mean, Adam Lowry's never going to be a first-line or second-line center for the Jets. Can he play on the third line? Yes. But as you know, guys, last year when the Jets acquired Paul Stastny prior to the trade deadline, and then Brian Little became the third-line center, Adam Lowry was a perfect fourth-line center. Lowry has the ability to go up against the team's top centermen, and he does an excellent job. Very intelligent player. Plus, he can contribute offensively. So his ceiling is a third-line center, but he's going to give you everything that he has, and he can chip in a little bit of offense. But yes, his strength comes in the physical aspect of his game and face-offs and, as you mentioned, the defensive side of the game. But I think he does have some untapped offensive potential. Is Lowry ever going to put in 50 points? Probably not. But I could see him getting somewhere around, let's say 40. I mean, that's probably his offensive upside.
Right.
You know, 20 goals, 40 points, something like that.
But he's the first guy over the boards when you send out your penalty kill? from a forward's perspective.
Sure.
He's the guy taking all your defensive draws. So if you can also get, you know, 35, 40 points out of that guy, you're probably getting pretty good value in that situation.
Guys, this is a conversation probably for later in the summer or September, but I strongly believe the Jets are going to give Jack Roslovic every opportunity to be their second-line center.
To be their second line.
Not third line, second line.
So to play with
yep.
Ehlers and Line A is what you're sort of speculating.
Well, or, you know, maybe you move it around a little bit and, sure. and Line A plays on your top line and maybe it's Ehlers. I mean,
whatever it might be, but playing in that top six
right.
role.
I'm telling you right now, Ezzie wants it to be Ehlers, Roslovic, and
27, 28, 29.
And mostly because that way he can revitalize his what, Ez? What was the name of the line?
It was called the Roaring Twenties line,
uh-huh.
and it was not well received.
It was not well received. Stick to parenting, Mr. Ginsburg.
Despite the fact that I gave it a little IC retweet, we didn't get it going.
No, it didn't work for it didn't work for Ezzie there. Alrighty, when we come back, Jim Cerny of Sporting News Canada is going to join us. We'll talk about the goings on in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for everyone on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsburg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You know, we've been talking, obviously, a lot about Jacob Trouba and Adam Lowry the first couple segments this morning.
Yes, sir.
You know what I find very interesting about the offseason where we're at right now?
I don't.
It was a very quiet week as far as the rest of the league goes. Sure, there were a couple of contracts, but when you're talking about Erik Karlsson, Max Pacioretty, Jeff Skinner, a lot of players that we believe are going to be moved. It was very quiet on that front.
It certainly was.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Sporting News Canada, we're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend Jim Cerny. Jim, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, you got it. How are you, boys?
We're doing well, Jim. We're talking hockey in the middle of July. What could be better?
Exactly.
Jim, obviously brought you on. We'll take a quick look around the league. Sort of a bit of a quiet time, but arbitration hearings have really kicked off in earnest. That happened yesterday with the Jets and Jacob Trouba not getting to an agreement before their arbitration hearing. They sat down with the arbitrator in Toronto yesterday. From an outsider's perspective, Jim, the Jets came in at $4 million. Trouba's representatives came in at $7 million. How do you see the arbitrator, you know, determining where Jacob Trouba should lie in terms of a one-year deal?
Yeah, you know, you probably can argue the simplest thing to do is kind of split the difference and go in the middle and to argue that's probably more in line where Trouba should be, you know, somewhere in that $5 to $5.5 million if he was signed to a longer-term deal. That's the thing about arbitration, you know. It's either going to be a 1 or a 2 year, you know, agreement. And, you know, has he proven to be a $5.5 million defenseman yet? To me, he certainly has not proven to be a $7 million defenseman. But I think that's kind of where you're going to see this one fall. I was a little surprised that the two sides were so extremely far apart. You know, on this, I'm not surprised that Trouba was shooting for the moon and came in as high as he did. I'm a little bit more surprised that Winnipeg came in at $4 million. I thought that they would be higher than that.
Jim, switching from one defenseman to another, we've been talking a lot about Jacob Trouba over the last couple of weeks. This past week, it was very quiet on the Erik Karlsson watch front. A couple of weeks ago, it was looking like Erik Karlsson was heading to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Right now, as we stand, Saturday, July 21st, do you think Erik Karlsson's still going to be traded this summer? Do you think it might happen in September or maybe October when the season starts? And who do you think is the front runner for Erik Karlsson right now?
Yeah, it's a really, really great question. To me, he makes more sense to a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? Even though the Lightning have Victor Hedman and now Ryan McDonough's under contract long term. Boy, oh boy, that's a Stanley Cup contender, a serious one. And if you add Erik Karlsson to the mix, even when you factor in that you're going to have to trade off, you know, some key components from that team to make room for him, it would seem to make more sense for a team like that and for Karlsson to have the interest in re-upping with a team like Tampa, you know, sign an extension with a team like Tampa that would deal for him, than it does for the Dallas Stars. I don't know about you, how you feel about this, but I just don't see why Erik Karlsson would want to go to the Dallas Stars. Like, that's a team that could really go any one of a number of ways. A couple of their key guys are older. They have guys, you know, whose contracts are coming up shortly. I just don't see, if you're Karlsson, that, oh, that's such a greater fit than being an Ottawa Senator. Obviously, right now, being an Ottawa Senator is not a great thing. But I don't see Dallas being that, you know, that contender. You know, it doesn't scream at you, contender. So while Dallas may be able to put together a package, a good package, for Karlsson that intrigues Ottawa, look at it from Karlsson's point of view. Why would he agree to sign an extension there? So, yeah, I keep trying to figure out, is there another team in the mix? And I've made the argument over and over that I think a team that really needs him, that he could have interest in, because they're a team on the rise, and some good young players, the reigning Hart Trophy winner, and so that he may have interest in signing an extension with, and also has a lot of the pieces that Ottawa would be looking for in return, would be the New Jersey Devils. And they certainly have the cap room for him. And we know Ray Shiro pulls off, likes to pull off the good summer deal. So to me, I think there's another team out there that could be a fit, and that could hop into this mix. And I think if there is a lull, Tampa can't figure out how to get him, you know, under the cap. Dallas, you know, Karlsson doesn't quite want to go to Dallas. Well, look at other teams, and I see New Jersey being a really good fit.
You know, Jim, when Montreal Canadiens took Jesperi Kotkaniemi third overall, the talk was of him going back to Finland. But now there's some thought, because he made such a good impression in their development camp, that he could either start the year with Montreal or even play in Laval. Where do you see him playing, and do you think it would be a mistake to rush him to the NHL?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, because, you know, some, you know, people that know a lot more about, you know, the prospects and get to see him on a more consistent basis than somebody like me that's more, you know, just focused on the guys in the league right now. You know, some thought is a little bit of a reach, you know, that Montreal drafted for the position, but also looking down the road at the player. You know, they think they got a real quality player, but they clearly were going for position there, with the third overall pick. And some of the people believe that maybe he's not quite ready. But then he starts to change the narrative, as you pointed out, during the prospect camp. I think if you can, you bring him to camp and you start tossing him into preseason games and see how he fits in with the North American game, with the smaller rink and, you know, playing against, you know, men, and see where he fits in. I see absolutely no harm, as long as it wouldn't be an issue, you know, with the team back home, is if he started in Montreal and you have that, you know, you have a window, you know, for him to play there. I love, you know, I could see the Laval as well, opportunity, you know, to get him more adjusted to the North American game. But I really think it probably would come down to he's going to play in Montreal or he's going to play back home. And, the question would be, at what point do they make that decision, or can they make that decision?
Jim Cerny is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jim is the managing editor of Sporting News Canada. Jim, the Leafs, you know, were one of the big winners during the free agency frenzy, of course, getting John Tavares under contract. They're now Vegas betting line favorites to win the Stanley Cup next season, for all that's worth, in July. with their defense, their right side of their defense specifically,
yeah.
Can they win the Stanley Cup, or do they need to address that side of the that side of their game?
Yeah, they may not have to address it now, you know, over the summer or even before training camp, but you would think that they'd have to address it at some point before the playoffs start next year. You know, so maybe, you know, they go up to the deadline, you know, and make a move around that time. Listen, right-hand shot D, they are not a dime-a-dozen thing in the NHL. To find quality right-hand shot defensemen, it's a tough get. And, it takes time and it takes assets to get guys like that, you know, the real quality ones. It's part of the reason why I'm sure Jacob Trouba shoots for $7 million in arbitration. But that said, are they a real legit Stanley Cup contender if they don't get another defenseman, a quality top four guy? It's a tough question, you know, because obviously their offense is going to cover up, you know, some of the holes on their roster in other areas. But I think that before the trade deadline, before the playoffs next year, they're going to have to get that guy. They're going to have to bring somebody in. And like I said, I don't believe it has to happen now. You know, I think they could still go into next season and kind of give some of those kids, you know, that played so well for the Marlies last year, the Cali Rosens and guys like that. You see if they can work them in. And see how that goes. But I think ultimately, if they really view themselves as a cup contender, they're going to have to get somebody before the playoffs next year.
Now, Jim, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the St. Louis Blues, the Buffalo Sabres, these are teams that have got the headlines here in the offseason and are considered by many to be the winners. But when you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, they signed Derek Grant earlier this week to a one-year contract. He had 12 goals last year with the Anaheim Ducks. When you look at what the Penguins have done signing Jack Johnson to that five-year deal, they bring back Matt Cullen on the one-year deal. They signed Jamie Oleksiak to a three-year contract. They also signed Jimmy Hayes to a one-year deal. When you look at what the Penguins did in the offseason, do you think enough people are giving Jim Rutherford credit for some of the savvy moves that he made?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They're flying under the radar a little bit, you know, this offseason. And really the feedback that they got, or, you know, the press that they got, was for the Jack Johnson signing. And let's face it, it wasn't all that positive. I thought, I'm not crazy about the term. I'm not crazy about the 5 years. But I think the financial outlay and the salary cap hit is certainly not out of line for a player of, Jack Johnson's skill set. And, you know, I think you're not asking him, you know, necessarily to be a top pair guy. You know, I think he's going to be at this stage a little bit more of a veteran complementary defenseman. And I think he's going to be really rejuvenated by going to Pittsburgh and, you know, by going to a legitimate cup contender. Not that Columbus was a bad team, but his situation certainly wasn't great. And, you know, even with all the support that organization gave him during his issues with his family and then the financial situation and all that mess over the years, I think it's a fresh start for him. I really think that Johnson can surprise us here. I know there are a lot of people that hate that deal and think that he is well on the downside and everything. I see the opposite. I see a guy that is still a good player that can be rejuvenated by this opportunity. And, you know, we know about his relationship with Sid, and, you know, I think that certainly helps as well there. I think first and foremost for the Penguins, maybe the best thing that happens is that they got knocked out in the second round of the playoffs. And, you know, that gives them an extra month to just recuperate from the grind of the long runs, you know, the couple previous years, and kind of feed into the overall team hunger there again to get back and show them, you know, Sid especially, you know, thrives on this kind of stuff, you know, to show the rest of the league that, hey, we're still the Pittsburgh Penguins. We can win this thing. And now, you know, we got another extra month where we got to heal and rest. And, you know, sure, we would have preferred to win a third straight cup. But if we were going to lose, you'd rather kind of lose early then go through the grind and lose late. And, you know, that could really have altered the course of how at least the beginning of this upcoming season would be for them. So, to me, they're a team really to keep your eye on. And, you know, I know I'm going too much into predictions here and everything, or forecasting, if you will. The real key to me for that team is Matt Murray's got to find a way to stay healthy throughout the season. You know, he really hasn't done that yet. And with all the things he's accomplished in his young career, staying healthy, you know, is the thing that he has not been able to do.
Well, Jim, we're going to ask you to keep your prognostication hat on anyways, because that involves my question. But we're going to switch over to the rivals of the Penguins, the Columbus Blue Jackets. And Artemi Panarin put a September 13th deadline. He said he will not negotiate during the season. So what do you think happens in that situation? Because obviously this is a team that doesn't want to lose him as a free agent.
Yeah, they absolutely don't want to lose him. They, you know, they want to sign him to an extension, and why not? He is one of the most dynamic players in the National Hockey League. And by all accounts, you know, had a great experience off the ice as well as he played on the ice, had a great experience in Columbus last year. But he seems to be itching for, you know, kind of a bigger stage, bigger lights, brighter lights. And if that is really the case, and if, you know, the Blue Jackets certainly know him and their relationship with him, and they know the player better than I do, you know, they must have an, you know, a better feel for the fact that most likely it looks like he is not going to sign an extension in Columbus. And if that's the case, they got to do what they can, everything in their power, even though he is their best player, their marquee player, to get something in return. You certainly, and I'm not saying that these are exactly similar situations, well, they're similar, but not exactly the same. But you don't want to be the New York Islanders and then caught at the end and you got nothing for losing your best player, your marquee superstar player. So, you know, I think that's a lesson learned throughout the league. You know, Ottawa's certainly going to learn that if they don't get Carlson to agree to an extension at some point soon. You know, it's absolutely that they're going to, you know, they're going to trade him somewhere at some point. And I think that's the way it's going to be with Columbus. And, you know, it's a shame because, again, by all accounts, Panarin had a great experience in Columbus. It's just not enough for him is what I'm hearing. You know, he longs for, and not that I've heard specific cities, but a bigger stage. You know, who knows if that's in L.A., a New York, you know, a Montreal, a Toronto. Well, Toronto would be a bad example. They can't fit him under the cap, but you know, a bigger stage than Columbus is.
Jim Cerny is the managing editor for Sporting News Canada. Jim, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us. Have yourself a great rest of the summer.
Yeah, you got it, boys. Take care.
Take care, Jim. Thanks very much. Quick update from the Open Championship in Scotland. Carnoustie Tiger Woods tearing it up 5-under on the day through 12 holes. He's got another birdie putt coming up at 13 to move into a tie for the lead. That's available right now on both CTV and I believe TSN 4. So if you're into golf and you want to watch Tiger, turn it on, leave us on the radio, and turn your TV to CTV or TSN 4 to watch Tiger on the back nine. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we discuss Artemi Panarin. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Where do you think he would potentially like to go?
A major market. He wants to go to either coast, New York, L.A., back to Chicago would be awesome, and I think that's going to happen. So I don't think it puts a wrench in it because there's uncertainty about his availability, right?
That's Dennis Bernstein of the Fourth Period talking about Artemi Panarin and his future with the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's given the Blue Jackets until September 13th. He set a September 13th deadline for all quote-unquote business to be taken care of before the season starts. Not 100% sure what that means. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Drew Mandel alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, and this segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue That's the corner of Portage and Sherburne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Yeah, maybe hold off on that Panarin Blue Jackets jersey, Drew.
Yeah, you might want to, yeah, exactly. Maybe, you know, tap the brakes on that one because it sounds like he's not going to be long for Columbus. So he's given this deadline of September 13th. I mean, I'm not sure what this deadline really means. It doesn't sound like he wants to, that he's going to sign a long-term extension in Columbus. He's an unrestricted free agent after the season. And as you heard Dennis Bernstein say in that clip, and as you've heard, he wants to go to a more major market. New York, L.A., Chicago, wherever else. You know, Vegas maybe. I don't know if that constitutes as a major market. But he doesn't want to be in Columbus. More or less, he said so. What does the September 13th deadline really mean in your mind?
I have absolutely no idea, guys. And, you know, last weekend, Dan Milstein, Artemi Panarin, Jarmo Kekalainen, Blue Jackets general manager, they all met in France. Nice. Yeah. I've never been there, but I think you have.
No, I've never been. I've been to France. I've never been to Nice.
I've been to Nice.
Apparently it's nice.
I saw that coming from a mile away.
I honestly saw that, a mile away.
I'm
not even joking. I didn't know you were going to use that word, but I saw that 2 segments ago happening.
Come on, boys. Dad jokes, right?
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, dad bod and dad jokes over here.
I've always had the dad bod, Drew. Yeah. But when you're talking about, you know.
You weren't always a dad, though.
You know, Aaron Portsline, good friend of the show, writes for The Athletic, used to cover the Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. You know, he's been all over this story. When he writes that this meeting wasn't about a contract extension, well, what were they meeting about? I mean, Artemi Panarin has 1 year left on his contract. He's coming off of a career year. What did he have, Dave? 82 points, something like that?
34 more points than Pierre-Luc Dubois.
There were some people that thought Panarin should have been a Hart Trophy candidate. I'm not joking. Right. I mean, this year was probably a bad year with, you know, what Taylor Hall and Nathan MacKinnon and Andre Kopitar were doing, Blake Wheeler, but
Connor,
I mean, Panarin had a very underrated year. 82 points. He was top 10 in the NHL in scoring this year, and we know how good he was with Chicago, but he's still relatively new to the NHL. You forget that, you know, he was signed by the Chicago Blackhawks out of the Continental Hockey League, and if you're Artemi Panarin, I mean, you could easily get $8 to $9 million, I think, on your next contract. I mean, I don't think he's as good as Nikita Kucherov, but I think he's not that far behind, so I think you're looking at that type of money, but when you're looking at the Blue Jackets, I mean, this is a team that's on the up and up. And Jarmo Kekalainen, I think, is an excellent general manager. John Davidson is the president there. I mean, it's pretty clear that Panarin does not want to be there long term. So for me, putting the September 13th deadline in, you're basically saying you're kind of forcing them to trade you now.
Well, I mean, you're obviously, what you're trying to do, I mean, the deadline means absolutely nothing. It's not like he doesn't have I don't believe there's any no move, no trade clause available in his contract. So because he was traded from Chicago to Columbus, so there obviously isn't one. I mean, if you're Panarin, you're just sort of, that's your way of requesting that they get you traded before training camp begins. But there's no, you know, the Blue Jackets don't necessarily have to do it by then, and he has no leverage, so it's not like that deadline actually means anything. But I think he's actually done the Blue Jackets a favor, if you really consider it. I mean, look at it. He said, in basically no uncertain terms, I'm not interested in re-signing in Columbus. And that's certainly his prerogative as a pending unrestricted free agent. So they don't even have to go through the dog and pony show that the Islanders have to go through with Tavares. They know he doesn't want to re-sign, which means the Blue Jackets have to trade him by the trade deadline. There's no point in trying to hold on to him to see if they can, you know, get him to change his mind. You know, the horse is out of the barn. He doesn't want to be there after this season. This deadline doesn't really mean anything, but the fact that he doesn't want to be there means they have to trade him either now or by the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, his agent Dan Milstein basically said that the reason he doesn't want to talk about it after September 13th, and the reason why they set that as the deadline, is because his client wants his focus to primarily be about hockey. And we do know that, I mean, as people in the media, when a player has a contract situation, it can become overpowering in terms of constant attention throughout the season. So, you know, I mean, whether you get questions about it from local media or when you're on the road by other media. So I think what he's trying to do, in addition to what maybe, you know, set some sort of parameters for the team in terms of maybe trying to move him before the season begins, but also the idea being like, if I do play for Columbus, I don't want to be constantly inundated with questions. Are you going to sign a deal? Are you going to sign a deal? He's essentially saying, I'm not talking contract.
Also said, I'm not signing a deal.
Well, in theory, but what I'm getting at is he's still giving them the opportunity. I mean, you never know. I mean, like I said, I you're right, Drew. The likelihood is not. But at the same time, he's not saying I will not sign a contract.
I think the Blue Jackets, Dave, did not want this to be so public, right?
Yeah,
because now the entire hockey world, all 30 other general managers, know that he's not going to sign there. So it puts the Blue Jackets at a disadvantage. Now, Drew, I think they're going to get an incredible haul in return for Panarin, because Panarin, you look at his age, right? He's 26, 27 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he could be in the NHL for another 10 years, and he's going to want to sign a long-term contract. So I think you're going to get some really good players in return. You'll probably get, you know, a first-round pick. You'll probably get a couple of roster players. Look at what the Sabres got for Ryan O'Reilly, right? I think that's a good example. I think Artemi Panarin is obviously a better offensive player, and he's a winger as opposed to a center.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you'll get a similar haul back for Artemi Panarin, even better.
Well, the Blue Jackets would probably be better off doing it sooner rather than later, as opposed to letting this continue throughout the rest of
the
season.
Yeah, Panarin
wasn't
top 10 in the league, by the way. He was 20th overall in the league with 82 points. But the point is, I mean, he's one of the 20 best offensive players in the league.
You can do penance during the break. How about that? You can
sure.
apologize for your errors in the break. When we come back, the Edmonton Oilers have had a bit of a peculiar offseason, haven't really done a lot to retool a lineup that missed the playoffs last year. Did they need to do more? We'll talk about it with Dave Jamieson of TSN 1260 in Edmonton up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. You know, Facebook.com is also a good avenue in which to find us. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Edmonton, where we're joined by our good friend Dave Jamieson. Dave is a host on our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260. Dave, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Well, it's great to be here.
Dave, it's always our pleasure. Brought you on to talk about the Oilers and their offseason. This sort of stemmed from a conversation we had on last week's show, where we found the Oilers' offseason to be a bit peculiar in that it's a team that, you know, badly performed last year, with the exception of Connor McDavid, of course, a team that missed the playoffs by an absolute, you know, huge margin, yet they didn't really do much, if anything, to retool the lineup. Is peculiar a good word to describe the Oilers' offseason?
Yeah, it's one of the best I've heard, actually. It's been a strange year. We're heading into the year of the bounce back, right? So the Oilers management is counting on bounce backs from Cam Talbot, Adam Larson, Oscar Klefbom, and pretty much anybody not named Connor McDavid, right? So if it could go wrong last year, it likely did. And the only thing that kept this team afloat was Connor McDavid. And he was exemplary again. We come to expect it, and hopefully, until we're told otherwise, you know, he can do it again. But you know, but the Oilers are kind of boxed in terms of cap. I mean, they can't go and swing hard for the big free agents. Hence, you get the additions of Tobias Rieder and Kyle Brodziak, who might actually address and likely will address on some level the lack of depth up front. They finally, at the end of last year, after, you know, people howling for weeks, if not months, to get Ryan Nugent Hopkins playing with Connor McDavid, when it finally happened, after Nugent Hopkins came back from injury, it looked good. It felt right. It felt as if, you know, this was a duo that could, you know, have a long shelf life, have a good ongoing working relationship. You know, I think the Oilers now, you know, what they've done there is they've forsaken the center in Nugent Hopkins and putting him on the wing. But, you know, they've got Dreisaitl, they've got McDavid. And then you've got the Milan Lucic question, which really almost deserves its own show to discuss thoroughly. But the reality is he was largely ineffective. He came under a lot of scrutiny, a lot of criticism, and there was going into the offseason, and it's really kind of carried very quiet now, is the idea, or at least the belief, that Lucic wanted out of Edmonton. Now, his agent has come out to say, no, you know, we'll be there, he'll be there. But the Oilers, and I guess their fans, are really counting on Milan Lucic returning somewhere close to whatever his best was. And, you know, there's a lot of doubt that he can do that.
Dave, I want to go back to what you just mentioned a minute ago about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins playing on the wing as opposed to center, because for the majority of his NHL career, he's been a center, and then he was moved to the wing, and as you mentioned, played with Connor McDavid. For you, is that what makes the most logical sense, to have Ryan Nugent-Hopkins on the top line with Connor McDavid and then Leon Draisaitl as your second-line center?
Well, I guess whatever passes, I mean, it's not a necessity. I mean, this is, you know, players are always going to have some success playing with Connor McDavid, but it requires a certain skill set to be able to think the game. You're never going to be as fast, so forget the idea of two guys sprinting up and down the ice, you know, in lockstep. That isn't going to happen. But Ryan Nugent-Hopkins knows where he should be, and maybe more importantly, knows where he shouldn't be. He is a tremendous passer. He does a lot of the sort of, you know, I call him the unsexy things on a hockey rink, but he does things away from the play, pretty good in the face-off circle if need be there. I mean, he's, you know, I'm a fan of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I think he's, the best way to describe his style of play is understated. But don't confuse that with ineffective. He can, he's really agile on his skates. He can do some things out there that I think really complement McDavid. But it does leave the Oilers a little deficient. And, you know, scoring from the wing has been a concern in Edmonton for a few years. I mean, they had Maroon. That was a great thing with McDavid. But, you know, Maroon's now on to two more teams since the Edmonton days. You know, there's a lot of fingers being crossed here in Edmonton and hope. You know, it's a season where people are hopeful, but that's different than wildly optimistic.
You know, Dave, not since 1980 has an Oilers defenseman in Paul Coffey made the jump in their first year after being drafted and playing in the NHL. Do you think that that could change with Evan Bouchard, who signed earlier in the week with the Oilers?
Well, you know, based on everybody weighing in on what he can do and their pressing need for a right-handed shooting defenseman who can make a good outlet pass and, when working the point on the power play, can get shots through. That's a lot to ask of a guy in his first year. I mean, you're right. That statistic is sort of, you know, mind-blowing in a sense, but Paul Coffey lives in a different kind of area code than the rest of, you know, mere mortals playing hockey. So, you know, all of that said, I mean, when it comes to player development, the Oilers do not have a rich history of doing it particularly well. I mean, Connor McDavid did not need to be developed. He did not need to be. He was out of the box, brilliant, and ready to go. When you have a first, and the Oilers are no stranger to first overall picks or very high picks, but you're talking a defenseman here. And, you know, what's the sort of rule of thumb, 300 games, and then we'll make a decision on whether he can play? I mean, that's a long way off for Evan Bouchard. It's a great storyline going in, and how different is that than the Oilers, you know, have been typically? Because they, you know, they haven't had a great deal of success in you know, procuring defensemen, and it's going to be neat to see whether or not they can bring this guy from, you know, birth and carry him through the process of becoming a really good NHLer. I mean, again, a lot of hope.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is a host on our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260. We're talking about the Edmonton Oilers offseason. Dave, $2.5 million for a backup goaltender named Mikko Koskinen. He obviously comes over to the NHL, you know, after having played his career overseas in Europe. What are expectations from him? It seems like if Cam Talbot is able to rebound, which you identified as sort of a key to the Oilers' season, that you're paying $2.5 million for a guy who might not see the ice that often.
Well, that was, if not the first move made in the offseason that raised an eyebrow, it was certainly close to it. I think a lot of people are going, could they not have found that cheaper and you know, closer to home? I mean, Koskinen had a cup of coffee with the New York Islanders and didn't show himself to be anything, you know, hence returning to Europe. It was a strange move. It felt like, from a lot of different angles, an overpayment on a position where you shouldn't be overpaying. I mean, they've got Al Montoya, be that as it may, you know, all of this is going to hinge, like it so often does. I mean, we'll talk about backup goalies and fourth line, you know, checking wingers and so on and so on, but really, you know, what's going to decide games and stretches of games and then ultimately seasons, it's going to be your star players. Cam Talbot's a star player. They need him to be better. They need him to start games better. The Oilers were too often trying to, you know, punch off the back foot, and then they weren't good enough.
Dave, Jesse Puljujarvi is a player who Winnipeg Jets fans are very familiar with. He went fourth overall back in 2016, a couple of spots after the Jets drafted Patrick Laine second overall. Obviously, Pierre-Luc Dubois went in between them, and it was a big surprise. Dave and I were there in Buffalo. When you talk about Jesse Puljujarvi, he's coming off of his first full season with the Edmonton Oilers. Does it go without saying that the Oilers are going to be expecting much more out of Puljujarvi this coming season?
Well, they should. Puljujarvi should expect more of himself. You know, this is a finicky one with Puljujarvi. There were a lot of people, I mean, when things started to go really bad for the Oilers, you know, there was, hey, let's bring out the blender, throw him up with McDavid, and let's see what kind of magic they can make. There is a criticism, you know, and these things take hold. I don't know how true they are, but, you know, you hear it often enough, it's become sort of the narrative on a particular player, is that while he's got the physical attributes, he certainly has a heavy shot, hard shot, so on and so forth, he may not think the game yet at the NHL level. So he is kind of wandering out there, and they can ill afford to have a guy take up, you know, top line minutes, top two line minutes, and be guessing. And too often it looks like he's guessing out there and trying to get by on all of the attributes and strengths that got him to, you know, the level that he was at. And so, you know, that's going to be a real interesting one to see. You know, I mean, of all the storylines, and God, I'm not even sure we're going to touch on all of them for the Oilers going into this year, but that is going to be a really interesting one. You know, he's got to have a strong camp, right? I mean, every player does, but he's really got to go in and I think, you know, impress Todd McClellan. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the new assistant coaches who have come in here, because that was also an ongoing problem. Special teams last year. It's a show me year for Puljujarvi, and it's weird because he just got here.
You know, Dave, you answered in part talking about when I asked you earlier about the you were talking about the prospects and the development to the NHL. And the move I was interested in is Jay Woodcroft now being moved from the Edmonton Oilers as an assistant coach now to the head coach in Bakersfield. What do you think that means for the organization?
Well, that's a funny, and it's a great question. I guess the quick answer is I don't exactly know. I mean, it gives Jay Woodcroft a chance to, you know, while going backwards in terms of the level of hockey he's coaching, go forwards in terms of his career development and evolution and where he's going to, you know, ultimately or hopefully for him, end up, which is back in the NHL, maybe a head coach. But Jay Woodcroft, and to a lesser extent Jim Johnson, became such polarizing figures last year for fans because the special teams were, I mean, they were comically awful. I mean, the Oilers on the power play, I mean, if there was a way that you could decline a penalty in the NHL, the Oilers should have done that more often than not because they were so ineffective. And so, you know, Woodcroft bore the lion's share of the criticism. You know, Todd McClellan, obviously, he and Jay Woodcroft have a long relationship. Todd McClellan, I'm sure, believes in him as a coach and as a person. And so the Oilers did a good soldier, a solid, and move him down. And then they bring in Trent Yonne and Glenn Gullitson. So they've loaded up their coaching staff with guys with, you know, NHL chops. Not that Woodcroft didn't, but, you know, these guys are, if you will, star assistant coaches. And, you know, and also Manny Viveros coming in. And so, you know, the Oilers, the belief is they're going to be philosophically different, right? That they with new eyes are going to take a look at, you know, the talent that the Oilers have. And this is not a team, this is a team, you know, with considerable talent, not just Connor McDavid. I mean, Draisaitl, obviously, but they've got to get more out of more this year. And, you know, we've not really touched on, you know, Adam Larson was not good last year. Now, some of that was personal with the death of his father. I'm sure that played into it. But then there was, you know, Klefbom was nicked up. They didn't get Andre Sekera back until, I think, December. And then when he came back, as, you know, I think you would reasonably expect, he wasn't fully himself.
Dave Jamieson covers the Edmonton Oilers on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. He's the host of the Dave Jamieson Show. Dave, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great rest of the summer.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Dave. When we come back, we look around the NHL. There's been a bunch of signings. We'll talk about Max Pacioretty and his future in Montreal. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for everyone on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
But given the fact that I think everybody, you know, fan base, media, organization knows there's going to be some struggles, then I think you can conveniently avoid that topic. Although I know the media will bring it up, I think the organization shouldn't consider that to be the most pressing of issues right now.
TSN's Aaron Ward on TSN Radio in Montreal talking about Max Pacioretty, the captain of the Montreal Canadiens, his future with the team very much up in the air as we sit here on the 21st of July. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. It's a long time. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you love Bernstein's as much as we do, show them some love, leave them a 5-star review on TripAdvisor. That's what I would give as good advice. What do you think about that?
I would give them much more than 5 stars.
Yeah.
The Illegal Curve sandwich is a 20-star sandwich.
20 stars. 20-star. I don't even know if you can do that on TripAdvisor.
And the reason why I picked 20 is because that's how many Illegal Curve sandwiches I had this week.
Oh, really? 20 sandwiches. Yep. That's a lot of sandwiches.
Yep.
Okay, well, good for you in that
it's
case.
It's an average of almost 3 a day.
Yes, your math is correct. It's just under
his
3
AAS,
a day.
AAS.
Yeah.
Average annual.
Yeah. Average weekly sandwich intake, AWS. Yeah. Anyways, Max Pacioretty.
I want to go back, sorry, if okay. I can, Drew, just quickly,
yeah,
to go
sure,
back to last segment, Dave Jamieson, great interview.
Yeah.
And if we go back to last week.
Sure.
And
we're
we
going
gave,
back a long way.
Yes, we gave our winners and losers of the offseason. One of my losers was the Edmonton Oilers. Now, just because I said that they were one of the losers doesn't mean that I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. And that's something that I think.
It's an interesting dichotomy you bring up there.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I don't think anybody thought the Oilers were going to be as bad as they were last year. I think they will be a playoff team next year, and I wouldn't be surprised if they compete for the Pacific Division as well.
So when they finish 31st in the NHL, we'll know exactly why. So you think it's just that they're going to be better based on the internal improvement of people not named Connor McDavid?
Exactly. So you're talking about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. You're talking about Milan Lucic, Jesse Puljujärvi. You're talking about Oscar Klefbom, Adam Larson, Darnell Nurse on the back end.
Cam Talbot.
The Oilers have way too much talent, in my opinion, not to be a playoff team.
Okay, well, there you go. You have a bold prediction.
I just think they could have done more to shore up their defense in the offseason.
Not an unreasonable comment from you. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. If you know, you're right, because in some regards, internal improvement, we saw it here in Winnipeg. Remember, it was only a couple years ago, but that basically this same roster missed the playoffs, and then last year they had their terrific year, just based largely, or to some extent, on internal improvement. So rather than having to overhaul or retool or whatever you know adjective you want to use, sometimes internal improvement is just enough to get it done.
And Mikko Koskinen, I think, is going to help big time because Cam Talbot is going to have to play less games, I should say, and he obviously has the KHL pedigree.
Sure.
And if you know you've watched him in that league, he's been a top goalie and he's represented Finland internationally. So I think that's going to help a lot because I think Cam Talbot, you know, over the last few years has just played too much.
Yeah, he has, and it doesn't. The defense has to improve in front of him because it doesn't matter how good the goaltender is with the defense playing the way they did last year as a bit of a leaky sieve. In any event, Max Pacioretty is how we're going to start this topic, this segment. It continues to be a saga in Montreal where they've basically said to Max Pacioretty. It was sort of the opposite of what's happening in Columbus. They've said to Pacioretty, we're not going to offer you a contract extension. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end, yet they haven't traded him. So you,
why don't they want to offer him a contract extension?
That would be my initial question.
I don't understand what's going on in Montreal. I really don't.
Well,
I have no clue where this franchise is heading.
You have Shea Weber, who's out for the majority of the year.
They're not going to be a playoff team next year.
No, they're going to be one of the bottom-feeding teams in the league. So if you choose that you need to do a complete rebuild and you need to tear it down, and trading Max Pacioretty would be part of that if you don't think he's got a future on your team, Why is that coming out? Why is that being announced? I know it wasn't announced by the team, but reports indicate that this is what Pacioretty's representatives were told. Once that's out there, you can't really go back on that. So what are they doing as they sit here on the 21st of July without having any resolution to this issue?
Well, Drew, I think it's pretty clear that Max Pacioretty is going to be traded. I mean, it could happen as early as next week. And it's unfortunate for Marc Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens because Pacioretty's coming off of a bad year. I mean, this is a guy who had four consecutive 30-goal seasons. And last year, sure, he missed some games, but he only had 17 goals. So even if you extrapolate that, I mean, he still wouldn't have got to 30 goals. So,
yeah.
I mean, Pacioretty right now is at a trade low position, right? You're not trading a guy who's coming off of a 39-goal season or 37-goal season like he was 4 years ago, right? So Marc Bergevin right now, I think, is trading from a position of weakness. But you've got to trade him.
I would have to think, Dave, that every other general manager in the league looks at Max Pacioretty and says, this isn't a guy who's a 17-goal guy. This is a guy who's probably closer to that 30-goal guy. Let's get him out of a bad situation. Let's surround him with talent and with stability. And, you know, this is the guy who's the captain of the Montreal Canadiens. Let's get the pressure off of him and out of that fishbowl. And this is the guy you're going to bounce back to get, you know, 30 goals, I think, is not unreasonable. 35 goals would not be unreasonable for Max Pacioretty in a different situation.
Yeah, and he's 29 years old, so, I mean, he's not like an old guy by any stretch of the imagination. And, mm-hmm. and I think there's, I think from Ezzie's point earlier, I think it's true. I think you sit there and you think to yourself, well, you're from Montreal and you're trying to maximize what you can get for this player. Like, why is this stuff getting out there? Like, why are you allowing this? Like, it's just too long. And we know that Montreal is an intense market, and you know there's probably discussions regardless of what time of day it is. Things are happening. People are always talking about Montreal Canadiens hockey there in Montreal. So I'm not terribly surprised that it's become like such a contentious issue. But to me, it's a function of like you just want this to be a quiet. You don't want this to be a talking point. You really, you know, focus.
Why is your business on display for everybody to see?
Exactly. And I just don't think it serves them well because but the reality is everybody knows where they're at anyways. They know that they probably want to move this player. Although, again, you know, we've talked about it throughout the summer. Mm-hmm. Where's Montreal going to get scoring from next year?
Yeah, they're just not.
They're
guys,
not.
I think if you're Montreal, I mean, you're trading Max Pacioretty to a contending team. And you're getting a package back that includes two or three prospects.
It's the same thing we said so far about, you know, Erik Karlsson, the same thing we've talked about Jeff Skinner over the summer. There's a lot of these guys whose names are still out there.
Right. I think Max Pacioretty is in a different league than Jeff Skinner. Jeff Skinner is a very good player. I mean, I don't think they're
35 goals. Though.
Sure. I don't think they're worlds apart, but Max Pacioretty is, I think, a more high profile player. That's just my own opinion. I mean, Jeff Skinner is a great hockey player, and there's a good chance he's going to be traded too. But when I think you're talking about Pacioretty, I mean, a team like the Nashville Predators, for example, if you're Montreal and you're looking at a team like the Nashville Predators, if they're interested,
sure.
I mean, you're probably asking for a guy like Elie Tolvanen, somebody like that. I think the Canadiens have to be looking at young forward prospects, young D prospects, maybe a draft pick or two.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they have to be looking at. They have to be looking at the future, Drew, because I don't care what anybody says. They're not going to be very good next year.
The beauty of a team or a team like Montreal that's in a position like they're in, they have so many holes that they need. It's not like they have to, you know, focus in on one team in particular and one player in particular. They have needs on the back end. They have needs up front. They don't have any needs in goal with Carey Price, although you wonder about, you know,
You're Carey Price. Do you really want to be there?
That's what I'm thinking.
I mean, think about it. You've signed this long-term deal, and you're thinking to yourself, do you really want to be part of a future that's, I mean, let's be realistic. That team is a contender. If they could ever get to that status again, is years away from that.
Well,
again, it's not a quick process. We've seen it here in Winnipeg. It takes time. You don't just build it. I mean, again, I'm going to say that after looking at Vegas last year,
mm-hmm.
but obviously that's an anomaly. The truth is you don't build a contender overnight. And Carey Price is at the point of his life where he's thinking to himself, okay, well, I've had some injury issues.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, I want to be competing for a championship now, not in 3, 4, 5 years. Guys don't like to, once they've signed those big deals, don't necessarily like to say, well, I want to get out of here. But you got to think, if he's seeing all of these, you know, elder statesmen of the team,
the core of the team. I mean, if you're Carey Price, you would have said the team is being built around myself, my PK Subban, and Max Pacioretty. And all of a sudden, two of those three are gone. Why do you want to be the lone holdout who's still there?
Well, technically, it's not two.
Well, not yet. But if Pacioretty goes, it'll be two. Or if he goes in free agency, next, you know, the year after this coming
never,
season.
That would never happen.
He'll be traded before
you have
then.
To trade him. I mean, this is we literally just laid out the reasons why. This is a team that's desperate in need for it. I mean, look at Laval. They were terrible, their farm team. You know, they didn't have a lot of prospects. Yeah. They really didn't, you know, so it's a function of, we talked about with the Oilers. Sometimes you just got to take that rebuild and rebuild your system within the AHL as well as the NHL.
When we come back, we'll discuss the Nashville Predators offseason. Chris Mason, their analyst, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Coming up in a couple weeks at Rumors, one of my personal favorites, good friend Daryl Lennox will be a Rumor. He's got a 2-week stint. Daryl is fantastic. If you're looking for something to do right around the beginning of August, I highly recommend checking out Daryl Lennox at Rumors Comedy Club. Tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com.
What about Mick Foley coming up in September?
Yeah, I saw that. I have to get a little bit more information on that, but I'm not 100% sure what's happening with that, but legendary hardcore wrestler and WWE legend Mick Foley. Well, hopefully he'll throw Ezzy off the Hell in the Cell. Or off the top of a building.
Drew, you better be careful, or I'm going to give you the mandible claw, or Mr. Socko.
Oh, either way, it sounds like you're going to stick your fingers down my throat. Trying to get Mason on the line to talk about the Nashville Predators and their offseason. There were a couple signings, though, in the league earlier this week. One I wanted to mention, first of all, Adam Henrique. A year away from unrestricted free agency, he gets a 5-year contract extension with the Anaheim Ducks. It's a $29.25 million extension, salary cap hit of $5.85 million. They acquired him from the Devils last year, if you remember, in the trade for Sammy Vatanen. Vatanen went to New Jersey in that deal.
I thought that was a trade that benefited both teams.
Absolutely.
Because Vatanen was obviously, you know, kind of the odd man out there,
yeah.
You know, with defensemen like Brandon Montour and Josh Manson, who had progressed through the organization, and the Devils needed a speedy defenseman on the back end, and the Ducks needed, you know, that player to come in and play third-line center. And I thought Henrique was excellent for the Ducks last year.
You know, you're absolutely right. I agree it was one of those trades that benefited both sides. Your thoughts on getting him under this contract as quickly as the Ducks did? Did you think that, you know, the dollar figure of $5.85 million for the next 5 years, I guess starting in 2019-20, is a good dollar figure? This is a guy who's probably, I think the Ducks would hope, would replace Ryan Kesler as maybe their second-line center, step up and play more meaningful minutes as Kesler continues to age with a bad contract on top of things, you know, maybe slot in there behind Getzlaff as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Ryan Kessler's not getting any younger. I don't necessarily think that Ryan Kesler is washed up by any stretch of the imagination, but I think you're right. You look at Adam Henrique and his offensive numbers, and, you know, I had no problem with the contract. And this Ducks team, even though they didn't have the playoff success last year, I don't think they're done. I don't agree with some people who think that this Ducks team is on the decline. I think they're still a playoff contender, and I really like that Henry contract.
Yeah, I mean, the question with them is, of course, with Corey Perry and trying to get him back to at least, you're obviously not going to get full value for that contract anymore, but some semblance of value out of Corey Perry at that dollar figure. I mean, you need to, you know, Ryan Getzlaff, when healthy, you know, that's the asterisk.
I think Getzlaff is still a top 10 center in the league.
I agree. You know,
still.
They need health. I mean, Kesler was banged up pretty much the entirety of last season, didn't work well with him. But if you can all of a sudden go healthy with Getzlaff, Henrique and Kesler down the middle, well, that's a pretty good 1-3 down the middle in that situation.
And you're still really strong in net, and you're strong on the back end. And I just don't think they're in as bad of a position as some people think they are.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Chris Mason, talk a little bit about the Nashville Predators. He's an analyst on Predators broadcast. Chris, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Chris, obviously wanted to bring you on to talk about the off season in Nashville. Sort of been a quiet off season for the Predators, you know, in that they haven't been especially active, sort of taking care of some of their own business, getting Ryan Hartman under contract, getting UC Saros under a very friendly 3-year contract. Is that sort of was that the game plan, you think, all along for David Poile, is take care of business and, you know, go back again with the similar roster that had such success last season?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, at the end of last season, obviously, it was disappointing the way it ended up. But, you know, that just goes to show you how good this league is and how good the Western Conference is. It's tough to get out, as the Jets saw. They had a great playoffs, and they ran into Vegas, and Vegas was hot. And I think the Predators, you know, much like Winnipeg, actually, I think they're pretty happy with the group they have, and I think they got that message from the players at the end of the year meetings that the guys wanted another crack with this group. They had a great season last year and obviously just couldn't get it done. So I think, you know, this group wants another chance to compete together. I know that they made some calls in the John Tavares sweeps there. They got a phone call and all that, but you know, they would have had to get creative, I think, to make that happen. And at the end of the day, obviously, he went to Toronto. So I think they're happy. The big one now for them is getting the Ryan Ellis deal done.
You know, Chris, about a month ago, Pekka Rinne won his first ever Vezina Trophy. And I know you've been a teammate of Pekka Rinne. You know him very well. I mean, how nice was that to see Pekka Rinne be rewarded as the best goaltender in the league? And as a second part to that question, how does Pekka put last year's series against the Jets behind him? It obviously didn't end the way he wanted it to.
Yeah, I think they've any elite player, you know, has stretches like that and has, you know, series maybe that don't go their way. That was a heck of a series, is entertainment wise for fans, both Winnipeg and Nashville, I'll tell you, but. Wasn't very easy on either goaltenders. They're just both teams on any given night seem to fill up the net pretty good. But you just move on. You know, that's the best thing about sports, and that's what separates elite guys is they're able to, you know, have down games within a season, within a series, and move on and put it behind you. And that's exactly, you know, what he's going to do. And he's very open and candid and honest about his performance and about, you know, where he is in his career. He understands he's getting older. You know, they're probably going to scale back games as the next season goes on again, with UC Soros having such a great year last year. And, you know, I guess, you know, UC's going to be the goalie of the future. And you mentioned they got him on a great contract for 3 years, and Peck is going to have a bounce back, you know, from the playoffs. He had a great season. But he's got one more year left on his deal, and I know he's not anywhere near done playing. So if he can still compete at that level, I think he's going to be fine.
Now, Chris, did you like the plan that they had? They used UC Saros both at the NHL level, and they also used him in Milwaukee. And I think he played about 9 games in Milwaukee, and we saw him here play against the Manitoba Moose. Now, as a goaltender, would you be told by the team that that's probably the plan going in?
You know what? I don't think it was the plan necessarily going in. The way that the season started and the schedule kind of fell, he got off to a tough start. Not necessarily the way he played, just results-wise. It just seemed the games that he played at the beginning of the year, he didn't get much goal support. You know, and you're playing the typical back-to-back games. And I think that they decided that they would, you know, send him down and let him play some games in. The next game he played after he got called up, he was fantastic. So they continued to do that throughout different parts of the first couple months when the schedule allowed, and they knew they were going to ride Pekka for a bit, or if they had a break in the schedule, and it really worked out. And as a goalie, you know, there's nothing better than playing games. You can practice all you want, and that's all fine and dandy, and you can, you know, try to mentally prepare, and some guys can do it, and sometimes you're able to do it, but I think consistency-wise, playing those games really helped him, especially bounce back from a slow start, and he had just a phenomenal year.
Chris Mason is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Nashville Predators and their offseason. The Predators got a bit of business done earlier in the week when they got Ryan Hartman under contract for $875,000 for next season. You know, we've seen sort of flashes of brilliance from Hartman. You know, we saw him when he came over and played for the Predators here in Winnipeg right after the trade deadline and was absolutely dominant. And then it didn't seem like things worked out very well for the rest of the season. He was a healthy scratch at times during the playoffs. What do the Predators want to see from Ryan Hartman entering his first full season with the team?
I think just more consistency. I think, you know, like you mentioned, he did show flashes of the kind of player that they felt they were getting. I know when they acquired him, they didn't feel like his body of work in Chicago was indicative of what kind of player he wasn't getting. For whatever reason, he ended up in Quinville's doghouse a little bit, wasn't penalty killing. I think they see him in that type of role. He's got a little bit of offensive upside. He's gritty and he's got that agitator side to him, but he can also contribute on the offensive side of things with his game, and he is a penalty killer. So I think that's kind of the role that they want him to kind of take. Now with the Predators being so deep last year and everybody seemed to get healthy near the end of the year, it was, you know, kind of based on, you know, how you're playing at the time, and they decide scratches like that. But again, I think, you know, got in a couple situations, maybe took a couple costly penalties and a little bit of inconsistency, but you can see that that he's a really good player, and he's just got to find his place on the team. And again, it's tough sometimes when you get traded near, you know, at the deadline or at the end of the season. It's tough to necessarily fit in. You're playing with different lines every night, and it takes a while to develop that chemistry. Sometimes you go and it's instant. But in this case, I think he's just got to find his spot, and he's going to be a nice piece for the Predators. I think they needed that type of player.
Chris, we wanted to ask you about Carter Hutton. You're very familiar with him. He spent 3 years with the Nashville Predators organization, obviously last year with the St. Louis Blues. But how nice was it to see Carter Hutton sign with the Buffalo Sabres? And it looks like he's going to get an opportunity to be the number one goaltender there.
I'm really happy for him. You know, he reminds me of myself a little bit. He's better than I am. But just, you know, when you get pigeonholed as a backup goaltender, He's been knocking on the door. He's done nothing but been great for the teams he's played on in St. Louis. They gave him a little bit of a chance at times when Jake Allen was struggling, but they never really let him take the reins there. And I think that he's earned this opportunity through hard work, and he never accepted that backup tag, and he kept pushing, fighting for minutes. And when he got opportunities, he's taken advantage of them. And with Phil Housley there in Buffalo, he's obviously very familiar with Carter, his work ethic, the character that he has in the dressing room. So that's a great fit for him and to get an opportunity. And that's the last couple years he's made his decisions on opportunity over money. And I think that says a lot about him. He could have stayed in Nashville. He could have stayed in St. Louis. They wanted him back, but he wanted more opportunity to play and try to get a chance to be a number one goalie, and it looks like you said, he's gonna get that opportunity in Buffalo.
You know, Chris, one young goaltending prospect we have here in Winnipeg is Eric Comrie, and you know, he's banging on the door, and there's some thought that he could be fighting for that backup role. Do you see, though, the benefit for a player like him to be able to have a full season as the go-to guy in the AHL versus practicing at the NHL level?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think, when we're talking about the UC Soros situation, if Comrie is able to win that spot, I think there's nothing better than being in the NHL and practicing with that level of player every single day and then playing those games. You might not play as many as you'd like, but, you know, especially with the way Winnipeg and Manitoba have their situation, it would be easy for him to get, you know, American League games as well. You don't necessarily need to be the number one guy. I mean, it's good, and you know, ultimately the goalie probably, you know, Comrie probably wants to play every single night like any other goalie does. But you also want to be in the best league in the world, and if you're good enough to play there, it's funny, every single game is of the utmost importance. You talk about four wins or four losses, and in NHL, that's the difference of making playoffs or not making playoffs, or winning your division, you know, or being in the wild card. So if he's good enough and they feel that he's going to be able to, you know, get them those crucial games and play in those situations, then I think it would probably be best for him to be in Winnipeg and then get some games in the American League.
And Chris Mason is a Nashville Predators analyst. Chris, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us to talk about the Preds. Have a great rest of the offseason.
Thank you, guys. I always enjoy coming on.
Take care, Chris. Thanks.
Cheers
again.
Chris.
When we come back, one final segment, we'll look at some of the free agents who are still available. We'll talk about some other guys who've signed this week. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
And coming here was, I thought it was the best chance to win. And you know, we fell obviously a game short moving on to the third round. So I'm really happy with my decision to come here. I love this place, and it's just wasn't meant to be.
That was former Nashville Predators forward Scotty Hartnell talking at the end of the year about his love for the Predators. Organization did not return that love, as they announced he would not return to the team. He is an unrestricted free agent as we sit here on the 21st of July. Some interesting names still available as unrestricted free agents. One of those interesting names actually signed earlier this week. That was Derek Grant, who signed with the Pittsburgh Penguins, got a one-year contract to play for the Penguins. You know,
and now the Penguins have 15 centers.
You know, when they're like the Jets. You can never have too many centers or guys who can play on the wing or guys who have flexibility with how they play. I like that signing for the Penguins. Derek Grant is a guy who's certainly not going to get the headlines, but for a depth guy who can, you know, score some goals and sort of play a simple game in your lineup, I thought that was a very wise signing by Jim Rutherford. You mentioned that earlier in the show when we were talking to Jim Cerny.
Yeah, I like that. And it's a one-year contract, and what was it for, $750,000, something like that?
$875,000,
something
like that.
And he can play wing, and he can kill penalties for you, and we talked about it. He scored 12 goals, had a bit of an underrated year. So, you know, I put together a little hit list here, Drew, of remaining UFAs. And, you know, these guys I specifically noted as guys that I think should still be signed. I mean, there's a lot of guys that aren't going to get contracts.
Yeah, they get PTOs or, I mean, a lot of these guys will get invites to training camp and then quickly get cut if they don't have it anymore.
Right, and I realize we only have 5 or 6 minutes here, so I'll try to be as quick as I can. That's kind of tough for me, but when you're talking about, you know, these players, as we just mentioned, I mean, you're going to get one-year deals, PTOs. One guy that stands out for me is Alex Chiasson. And, you know, he didn't play all the games for the Washington Capitals in the playoffs, but he did get into 16 games, and he was a Dallas Stars second rounder, if you remember. And
involved in the Spezza trade to Ottawa.
Right, and he's a guy for me that, you know, has the scoring touch, and he's been a pretty dependable winger. I mean, he's not going to be a first-line winger for you or a second-line winger even, but he can play on your third line and preferably on your fourth line. And again, you could probably get him for under $1 million a year, and he's not old. I mean, Alex Chiasson's only 27 years old. He was drafted back in, I think it was 2009, the same year that Tavares was drafted. So, I mean, Chiasson at 27 years old, a guy that can, you know, give you 10, 15 goals a year and play on your fourth line. If I'm an NHL GM, I would be looking at signing him.
Sure. I mean, it right now you're in the point of the season or the point of the offseason where, with the exception of restricted free agents, you know, where you're really taking care of your own business, this is where you're sort of doing your bargain basement shopping.
Right.
And we've seen every year, there's always guys who sign bargain basement deals in July or August, and they make a team, and they put up decent numbers. And either they get a contract extension, or they get traded at the deadline, or they fill a role. I mean, Devontae Smith-Pelly with Washington last year, sort of a perfect example of a guy who doesn't really come out of anywhere. He's not an exciting signing, but he fills a role and he gets comfortable in a situation. And for whatever reason, you know, he finds success. I mean, there's lots of guys every year that sort of strike
gold. Seven
goals
in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, you know,
I mean,
that's
for a guy that, you know, that he was on waivers, wasn't he?
I believe he was. I mean, this is a guy who bounced around from Anaheim, Montreal, New Jersey, and he ends up in Washington, and for whatever reason, things click. And, you know, a guy like Chiasson, you know, maybe he needs more of an opportunity. Maybe he needs whatever he needs. This is a guy, like you said, he can maybe get you double-digit goals.
He's a smart
hockey
player.
Probably on a lousy team more often than a great team, because the great teams aren't looking for those
guys.
He's got
a Stanley Cup ring.
Well, that certainly helps.
That's all that matters. Another guy I wanted to point out, guys, And now we're getting into some older players, and you know I have a soft spot for him because he's one of my favorite players of all time. But Scott Hartnell was not re-signed by the Nashville Predators.
You weren't in the studio for the start of the segment. Who do you think we started talking about to begin with?
Sorry, nature called, so yeah. I had to go take care of business, Drew. But
yeah.
You know, I still think, you know, Scotty Hartnell, he had 13 goals last year. I mean, he's 36 years old, don't get me wrong, and he only played a few games for the Predators. I think he played two games in the series against the Jets. But this is a guy that can still produce at 5-on-5. Is he going to play on your power play? No. Is he going to play on your penalty kill? No. But he can probably give you 6 to 10 really good minutes. And as I mentioned, you know, 13 goals for a 36-year-old, I mean, that's not easy to do. I mean, he's obviously a very high draft pick. He was a 6th overall pick by the Predators back in the day. But I think this is a guy that could still be useful on a team's 4th line. And again, you're not going to have to pay him a lot. You're talking about 1 year, $1 million probably for Hartsey.
Veteran leadership is what you're getting from him, Dave.
There's a lot of former Winnipeg Jets that are on this list. Enstrom, Sean Mathias, Paul Postma.
Steve Mason.
Anthony Peluso, Steve Mason. There's more. Hold on. Drew Stafford. I mean, former. Yeah. Lee Stepniak. It's a who's who of former Winnipeg Jets. What's his name? The young defenseman who never played. I can't remember his name.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
A lot of guys who are familiar to fans here in Winnipeg.
I want to get one more guy in, Drew, here, because I can't get through the whole list. But okay. Another defenseman that I think should be signed is Lucas Abiza. I mean, you can say whatever you want about Lucas Abiza, but he was playing a top four role for the Vegas Golden Knights in the playoffs, and he had a pretty good year. So for me, I mean, if Lucas Abiza is on your third D pairing and he's playing, you know, somewhere between 12 and 15 minutes a game, I think that could be another good signing for a team.
Before we wrap the show, I have to give a little bit of a shout-out here to our producer,
yep,
Rory McGoran. Rory, you can get on the mic here, buddy. Congratulations to Rory. We're so proud of him. He's been named as the new radio voice of the Humboldt Broncos.
Awesome.
Starting for the 2018-2019 season. Rory will be leaving us here on the program, of course. He's been our great producer for much of the last few years. Rory, we're so proud of you. Congratulations. As we wrap up the program here, a little bit about your excitement, a little bit about, you know, your apprehension, a little bit about your nervousness heading to Humboldt to be the new voice of the Broncos.
Yeah, excitement is through the roof. I mean, and I'd be lying to say if I wasn't a little bit nervous. Just, my heart is beating, and I am ready for the first game on September 12th. Last show with you guys next week, so it's been a great, fond 3 years, and I'm ready to go.
We're gonna miss you, Rory, because you've been producing the show for 4 or 5 years now,
yeah, something like that.
And you're awesome. You've obviously become a friend, and we couldn't be happier for your new job in Humboldt.
Yeah, it's happened so quickly. I got the first call late June. And me and my girlfriend Sam signed a lease here of an apartment in Winnipeg July 1st. And
good
then,
timing.
Great timing, of course. And then it just sort of the ball got rolling. Went out to Humboldt last week. Beautiful city. Everyone is very kind. I just want to... Tyler Bieber, the guy, he held the job before. He passed away in the bus crash. He was so embedded and so loved in that community. So if I can accomplish half of what he did in those terms, I think that's a success. And that's my biggest goal when I get out there, is just to be friendly and positive and hopefully just connect with a few of the people in Humboldt.
Well, we know, Rory, you're not going to have a problem with that. And it was serendipitous, because Ezzy happened to be wearing his Humboldt Broncos T-shirt last week when you broke the news to us. So all the best in Humboldt, and we're really happy for you.
That's awesome. You're going to do an awesome job.
We got 1 week left with you next Saturday, and we're looking forward to that before we send Rory on his way to Humboldt. You got to stay a Bombers fan, though. You can't become a Riders fan. That's the caveat that we're placing on you.
I had to keep the Bombers hat in the car when I went out to Humboldt there. I was a little worried.
Yeah.
The side of the highway, little towns where we had to stop for gas and drop in for a bottle of water or something, I was just a little cautious. I'm like, maybe I'll take the hat off this time, and then when I get out there, I'll have some fun with it.
There you go. That's it for the Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Rory McGoran, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. A reminder, 1 o'clock this afternoon, Blue Bomber game day, Walby Westwood bombing there in studio. Get you set for the Bombers and the Argos. Thanks for listening. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN Radio 1290.
that the other team will be all right.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.